All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
Underhyped or...
What are some of the cards that we did in the last episode? I think we did STI, we had in there.
STI. No, that's this episode. You're giving it all away.
Am I all over the place?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You're all...
I'm sorry.
That's why I don't name cars, because...
Well, so we did have Kelsey Rawlings on the last episode. She's also a Formula Drift Pro 2 driver who gave us her opinion on some of the cars, and I think she did spectacular on the episode. But the next episode coming up, I'm excited because obviously we're not going to tell you guys who. You'll find out Friday. But we have some really cool people on this episode that is going to be exciting. Mute the volume on the live feed.
Anyhow, with that said, make sure you check that out. And, oh, before we get Jonathan, we moved lives. The usual Wheel Wednesday live that we do on Instagram and Facebook, we are now doing it at 2 p.m. every Wednesday. So make sure you check into that. And if you have questions, as always, for Jonathan or for us, throw them into the comments and we will go back and get to them later in the podcast. Last week's podcast was Eric from G-Technic. He came on and talked about wheel coatings and ceramic coatings and some different things.
Then you would use
and
in a production
make sure you check
paint
out
environment
that
because
as well.
You guys want the durability for right.
So we're bringing him in,
specifically designed
the one and only
for that
Jonathan
environment
Cash
that the
Hurst.
Wheel goes
to.
It's
Formula
there
Drift
for
Pro
2
driver
that the wheel goes
rolling on them
while it's actually out there.
Countergrams.
Hey, what's up, guys?
That's good. It's good. Jonathan, welcome and thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, no problem. How's it going, guys?
Good. I think we're doing good. Can just slide that over so I can see my boy. There he is.
There he is.
So anyhow, so listen, I apologize. Is this like smack dab in the middle of your day?
Yeah, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. So we'll
I'll tell you this much from the conversations I've been having. He put in a lot of effort into this and joined us today. So thank you, Jonathan. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, guys.
Yeah, sorry. We're not the best at this. You know, we actually have to sell wheels at some point during our day, too. So, you know. Anyhow, let's talk about your season. So we synced up the beginning. We've talked more than a few times, and we synced up with each other, I would say, about a year ago.
Yeah.
And, listen, I mean – it's not that you hadn't put the work in. It's not that you weren't a good driver. I think there's also this learning curve that happens with Pro 2 that takes time to kind of build up and get the program right. And I don't know what it was this year that made things really click for you. What do you feel was it this year that made things really like come so full circle?
I'd probably have to say just like the experience from year one and two that I've did it. And just trying to put together a better program. Also having my head right when I'm pulling up to the line, not letting things get to me. You know, it's a lot different stage instead of Pro-Am. A lot more going through your head and stuff. So this year just is like take a step back, you know, before making the runs and focusing on what you're supposed to do on track rather than getting caught up on just, you know, everything else that's going on. So I think just having a good mindset was, very important. And then also kind of helping, teaming up with Hooman a little bit, just helping things with like transportation and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's no doubt. First off, I think Hooman is hysterical. He's really very funny. So I'm sure that the comic relief also adds value to the paddock area.
For sure.
but yeah, I mean, so that experience, at some point it starts to all click in. And in the way you mentioned that mental piece being just so important, I think it's an interesting piece. Luis is actually a break dancer.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason I'm actually saying this is not only so you can know that he's way cooler than I am, but because I think that there is this thing when you're an athlete, when you're a sport you know, involved deep in a sport, of having this mentality and having a really clear mental when you compete.
Yeah. That's a perfect segue to the question that I wanted to ask, because obviously every year there's been fans and stuff like that. This year we had the pandemic, so there wasn't fans. Do you feel like that played a part in your season in some type of way? Were you able to focus a little bit more, or does it not matter? You just feel like this was your time?
I don't think the fans really mattered this year, just for the fact that now, like, at the level I'm at right now, is like, I'm focused now. I'm dedicated, and basically, like, I'm going there every time to win, you know. Even though I was teaming up with Hooman, like, I was telling him, like, look, I'm not going there to let you win. Like, yeah, I want you to do good, but at the same time, like, I'm there to win. And whatever gets in the way of that, like, I'm trying to get past that and do as good as I can, because we're putting a lot into this. And, you know, there's some guys that show up there because they, you know, it's just like a hobby for them, which it is to me too at the same time, but also, like, I want to do really good and win. So I don't, but the fans, I mean, it would be awesome to have them. If anything, it probably would have helped to have them, because you want to put on more of a show for the fans. You know, I feel like trying to connect with them is pretty important, and is definitely huge in the sport of drifting. So
yeah. And that's one of the things, like, for instance, the first round. Now, the battle between you and Love was insane, dude. Like, obviously you guys had to, you know, OMT because of the fact, to me, you won that. But hey, I'm just a fan. I'm not a judge. I don't know what I'm talking about. But well, you know, that first round, like, Brian Egger gave you that round. You know what I mean? To, you know, so I was telling Scott, we actually had this conversation in breaking, because that's what I relate to everything, breakdancing. When two judges give you a tie and one gives that the other direction, that person who gets that direction wins. So it was funny, like, when I was watching that battle, I thought to myself, like, oh, man, I thought the same thing. I thought you won that battle. But I'm sure that for you, it was frustrating to kind of get that outcome, because I'm sure you probably thought you won too, because when you guys went that other round, to me, I still thought you won. So that was my perspective on it.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, like, I'm obviously going to be biased to myself, but at the same time, like, I go back and watch it. I mean, it was two really good runs. So, I can see the reason why they went one more time. It's not something that I'd be upset about. But at the same time, like, I had a lot of people, you know, telling me they thought it, you know, I should have won. But it's part of drifting. I mean, you're going to have those calls no matter what. And, it, you know, sometimes it may suck. But that call, you know, I could understand. I could go both ways.
Yeah, I think what's difficult is this is a really interesting battle that you brought up, because in a weird way, this battle could have changed the shape of the season, right? In theory, you win that battle, you have an event win, 12 points difference, you're 8 points down. So you, just by point total, now if every outcome after that was the same, you take the championship at the end of the season. But
for sure,
the one thing I've realized from, first off, I'm pretty good friends with Brian. And the one thing I've realized from talking to him enough and really getting the psyche of what an FD judge is, and this is, I mean, I would say that being an FD judge has to be one of the most scrutinized positions in drifting. I mean, everybody hates them no matter what the outcome is. But, you know, what we don't understand is what the judges see, that judge's perspective of how they view things from their position based off of everything that they have access to, whether it be cameras or you know, the different runs or whatever it is. It can really shape their opinion very differently to us. So, but it's an interesting battle to make note of.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So now, give people a little bit of touch of your kind of your coming up, because I want to be able to talk about where you're going, but to get there, I feel like we need to talk about, you came up in Pro-Am. How long did you spend in Pro-Am?
1 year.
Man, so you made the jump pretty quick.
Yeah, I've always been kind of really competitive, and I kind of, like, was involved drifting for a little bit longer than for a while before Pro-Am. So it's not like I just started out and was like, oh, I'm going to go run Pro-Am. But ran Pro-Am in like the first event, you know, got third place. And then it like sparked this interest in me like, oh, okay, well, let's try to make this happen or something. And I had no intentions of going to Pro 2 or anything like that during Pro-Am. I was just driving, having fun, did really well. And then at the end of the year, like I asked a couple people if they thought I should move up, and a bunch of people said no, but I looked at it like, you know, why not? You know, let's try it. Let's see how it's going to go. I mean, we don't really get very many opportunities, you know, sometimes, and I didn't want to lose the license or, and a bunch of things were like the MDU season after 2017, they didn't have one 2018. So it was like, what was I going to do? So I was like, well, let's just try it and make the jump. And I just kind of went in like just feet first, just not really with a lot of knowledge on what I was really getting into.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've heard different, you know, drivers over the years have really different perspectives on when they make jumps to different series and their progression. Some people are, you know, very much on the, I need to get all the seat time I can at a given level and become a dominant force so that when I make the jump, I'm, you know, above everybody else that was in the same series as me. I've had other people's, and Alec Robbins was a great example of this. When he made the jump, we had had that conversation where I'm like, hey, what do you think? Like, do you think that it's good to make the jump? Do you think you're going to hold yourself back into Pro 2? And his whole thing was like, no, like you, he goes, in my opinion, you always make the jump forward. That's where you're going to find the most, you know, the hardest competition. That's where you're going to learn the most. That's where your skill level is going to rise the most. And he goes, you know, after a while, if turns out I can't hack it there, at least I knew that I had given the best shot at trying to progress as possible, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly how I look at it.
So with that said, have you made any thoughts or opinions about what next year may bring?
Ooh. Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've been thinking about it even before the last round, because I'd already locked in a license.
Right.
So, I mean, definitely we want to move up. I mean, a lot of people are telling us that we should move up, which doesn't mean anything. I mean, we have to know for sure as a team if we're ready for that. I think we are, and just trying to work on my program, and I'm sure we'll know here within a couple of weeks or 3 weeks that for sure if that's going to be 100% what we're doing. But as of right now, like, we're trying to do everything we can to make Pro 1 a thing.
Yeah, well, you're right in that stage of the very complicated issue of funding.
Because, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not this year, but usually double the rounds. Well, this year, double the rounds. But I mean, usually double the venues. And I know that no matter how hard FD tries, they're going to have a really significant issue carrying different venues out because they start in April. Yeah. And they're talking about this pandemic and this vaccine and stuff not really being fully through like the first stages until the end of June. So there's going to be a lot of areas that who knows what the virus and the infection rate will be in certain areas, and they have to plan so far ahead. I'm glad I'm not them, but
absolutely.
Yeah, so
that's,
I mean,
that's kind of our thing. We're trying to, like, we're just going to try and plan to run Pro 1, and we're going to, you know, shoot for like as if the max, like if they're going to have 8 venues and we're going to have to travel, you know, 8 different venues all across the US. And if we have that budget, then it won't be an issue. And if they do something smaller, then we'll be prepared for that too, you know?
Yeah. What, tell me the mind, like, cause it, this is something, you know, I'm never a guy that likes to say like, never say never, but I like to ask this question, even if it's not on camera, to guys that are in Pro 2 making a jump up. What is the mindset that you have when, I don't want to say considering, I think those things are probably you can guess, but there are so many things that have to be done typically for an FD Pro 2 program to make the jump to Pro. What are the things that you're thinking about that maybe other drivers that are in the Pro-Am level may not be thinking about for if they ever get to this point?
I really think the thing is do you think you can go to, you know, a brand new track and build a tandem with someone in two laps. Like, because the differences I see, like, in Pro 2 to go to Pro 1, like, the difference is, like, when we go to Pro 2, like, people aren't really jumping in line on, like, they're getting, like, 5-6 laps by themselves or giving a huge gap. But if as soon as you watch Pro 1 practice, sometimes the very first lap, dudes are on each other's doors, like, they're, you know, like a finals run in Pro 2. So, but I've always been, this year, like, I've won, and every time I've went up, like, even in practice, my first lap, like, if I knew the guy beside me was going to lay down a good lead lap, I would definitely try to chase him on his door on the first lap. Yeah. So, me having that mindset, like, I feel like if I'm going to Pro 1, I'm going to be okay there. And then also, like, the biggest thing, you know, budget, I think that scares everyone. And as you know before, like, I've put together posts, like, saying how much I've spent in Pro 2 before and, you know, trying to do it as cheap as you can. And a lot of it, I just think, is dedication, you know, like, how bad do you really want it, you know? Obviously, yeah, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to how much you can, how much money you can put to it, or how much you can get. But at the same time, like, you can get around some of the money factors if you're willing to, if you have the dedication and heart to really, you know, make it happen.
Yeah, really reminds me.
So, you know,
good
funding for each round, I think, is, like, we're trying to fund for each round of Pro 1, like, it's not four rounds or it's eight rounds. So you need to have, like, a money, like, an exact limit or, and some cushion for each round to make it where you're not stressing, you know, each round. Like, sometimes in Pro 2, I was stressing on the money aspect and stuff. And in Pro, the last thing you need to be doing is stressing about something else other than worrying about your driving and focusing on your, you know, what's going on track, not anything else. 'Cause that's what those guys are doing.
Yeah. It, you know, it, there's so many things when I think about what I know, which isn't a fraction of what you know about driving a professional program. And I will say that when it comes down to drifting, one of the things that I echoes in my head is some of the conversations I've had with Travis Reeder, you know, and he talks about, like, his whole Pro 2 season, he literally lived in, like, he would do the motorhome thing, you know, so he didn't have to, that was a way he cut down on hotels and meals and then, you know, he and travel, you know, because he would use the motorhome to pull the car. So I think you have things like that. But then when it comes down to, like, how you can do a program on a budget, there's some things that people don't understand. Like, how about the fact that if you really want to be competitive, you have to have doubles of everything.
Everything.
You know, one incident wipes you out. And if you don't have that part on deck, I mean, you know, I've heard other guys that ran on a budget, right? Like Matt Van Kirk was a good example. When he ran FD1, he had the approach of he tried to build a car that he felt that on the parts that he couldn't have stocked in his trailer that he could possibly source from a local area wherever they were or junkyard. It's a very difficult thing to think of, you know, you're in the middle of who knows where and you blow a 2JZ and then you have to go to look for a used running short block.
Which, for sure. Actually, this is perfect because what I wanted to ask you, and I'm probably naive because I, you know, I could have looked it up, but it's a great conversation. In Monroe, something had happened to your car, correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, and that happened, you know, because to me, it's a great matchup between Love because it happened during Love. What exactly happened and how were you able to adjust it?
Well, so that was like a pretty big moment. Like, I wanted to win that battle pretty bad. But I'm like the very first lap at Seattle, I never driven that track. In my very first lap, I touched the wall. And so like I was running my first lap like it was my last lap almost on every track just because I felt like if I'm at that level, I need to be trying to put down, you know, a good run right off the bat. And I'd been touching the wall almost every lap. And in the previous battle, the judges were like, he's using the wall as a buffer. And I kind of was. And I told my spotter right before the run with Love, I was like, if I could just stay off the wall, I could probably win this battle. And as soon as I entered, like I knew that I didn't enter on the wall. And I entered a little bit off the wall to stay off of it, but the way the radius is, it kind of drug me back out to the wall, which I wasn't used to. And man, as soon as it grabs you far enough, like as soon as the wheel touches the wall,
Love did the same thing. You know, he did exactly the same thing. Yeah.
Yep. So and so we broke, you know, probably a couple of Koenig wheels, And the biggest thing was I broke the front lower control arm, and we had a spare. We had it all ready to go. I mean, we had, but you only have 5 minutes to fix the car. And on a G37 and like 370, they have 2 points on the lower control arm. So it, in all honesty, it's just probably not possible to change that arm in 5 minutes if the other, like the bracket was bent. So to get the two Heim joints to line up, it's super hard. And a couple of the bolts are super difficult to get out on the WiseFab. And it just wasn't possible for us to do it in 5 minutes. It honestly probably took us like 15 minutes. So even if we had 10 minutes, we would have been pushing it, but I'm sure we could have rigged it together to get me together in 10 minutes, but 5 minutes, just, it wasn't happening. And it sucked because if I would have, like, he got a zero on himself. So it could have been, I could have still won the battle.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. And it was a kind of like, you know, because just the round before he had, you know, so it was like kind of like a, you wanted it to be a comeback story, like, yo, this, you know, he's going to come back and win this. And then all of a sudden that happens. And because of, you know, mechanical issues, it couldn't happen, you know. But, you know, it is what it is.
When you were in Pro-Am, you ran, were you VQ twin turbo powered, or were you LS then too?
Yeah. So in Pro-Am, so a lot of people kind of hated on it because, so I drag race too. So I was using that car to drag race. And that year I did a lot of roll racing. And so it would make 1100 on the high tune. And then when I drifted for Pro-Am, I was making like 650, 700. I had turned all the way down.
Yeah.
And it was just really reliable. It's the same setup I still run now, just different turbo setup, but same block, rods, pistons, and stuff like that. And a lot of people thought I was making 1,000 horsepower in Pro-Am. I really wasn't. But my car in Pro-Am never had an issue. I mean, we never once had a mechanical failure. So that helped a lot too, you know, during my Pro-Am season. Because when in Pro-Am, I drove with like Jeff Donati, Garrett Denton, I mean, Derek Madison. It wasn't like a light, you know, pro-am. It was pretty stacked.
Yeah. No, that it makes sense. You know, I think it's like when you start talking about the power of FD cars, it's kind of a misconception that you load up the cars, make as much power as you possibly can, and then hit the track. Because first thing is you start blowing the tires apart. Your tire management seems to go all the way out the window the more power you make. So if your field doesn't warrant you making that kind of power. Did he go away?
No, I'm here. Sorry.
Oh, sweet. No, you're fine. So if you know, if you're if you're blowing the tires off the car, like, you know, constantly, you're gonna destroy and eat through tires. And, you know, arguably, I would say in the past few years, just a byproduct, it seems like a lot of the tire services that are available for Pro 2 at the track seem to have gotten more congested and tougher to deal with. So it's not like you guys can just run to the machines and try to, you know, get new tires on all the time. So, you know, the more power you make, the more you eat tires. And for that sure. Field doesn't always have cars that are, you know, 1,000 plus horsepower anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So what I wanted, you know, just to kind of talk about Texas, because in Texas, that was the event that you won. You know, you won the whole event. Now, yeah, as a fan, I wanted to kind of ask you, you know, because a lot of the runs that you went in, you were almost nearly perfect in almost all of them. You know, what was your mentality going into Texas? Did you just know the course well already, or was it just your day?
Do not blow off the track at the outside zone 3 to outside zone 4.
Yeah, it's a good tip.
It was just like my spotter, I was kind of not in practice. I wasn't really going all the way out to outside zone 4. My spotter was telling me, he's like, just find the limit. And so there was 2 laps that I blew off I just dropped a tire and off that edge. And so the whole time I was like, that's what I really like. That was one of the tracks that I was really having to use the foot brake to actually slow down on track. So I just was in my mind was like, just don't overcook it. So every time I came to the line, I just made sure that I wasn't going to overdrive my car in that section, but at the same time, try to hit the marks that the judges were wanting, because they were super, you know, picky on the lead laps. Mm-hmm. So if you could throw down a really good lead run, like you, the next guy was going to have to do just as good, or, you know, they got docked pretty good. So I just, in my head, was just making sure to just take it easy going from outside zone 2 to 3. Because even the Pro 1 guys in practice, like a lot of them are overcooking it through there. So I was just trying not to do that.
What changes do you think you will make on the car if you do make the jump to Pro One?
Well, I already got a GeForce GSR dog box that I'm going to switch to. Probably try to put the stock T56 Magnum.
Okay.
So, and then a winner's quick change and changing the turbo. And then that's probably about it. But hopefully, you know, bigger tire. So, wow.
So you're going to keep, are you going to keep the same specs engine wise and just kind of go to something that's a little bit more efficient turbo wise for the power range that you need to be?
Well, we're just going to, the turbo that I have now is like just an older generation. So we're just going to get the new generation almost same size. And also put together a spare complete engine. So it's 100% dressed and ready to go in case, you know, something crazy happens.
Yeah, that's awesome. I there's a comment that came in on YouTube and it said, "Hey, Jonathan," it's from Harlan. And he said, "I love your price breakdowns on Facebook." So is he talking, about the vehicle breakdowns where you show how much everything costs?
Yeah. So in 2019, like I did a complete price breakdown through the whole year of how cheap I was able to run Pro 2. But at the end of that year, I had a couple of people talk to me, tell me like, "Hey, maybe you should, you know, kind of lay back on posting all your, how much you're spending and how cheap you're doing it, because sponsors, companies, honestly, yeah, they just don't like to see that, you know, they want to put money into someone that's already got money. Unfortunately, I don't have that yet, but, I'm trying to use my talent, you know, to try to get to overcome that a little bit. But so this year I've just kind of laid back, not really posted how much money I've spent and went from there. So,
yeah, it's a tough thing. You know, it's hard because, you know, I could speak about the mentality of like, you know, our stuff or people that I know of and speak to. But, you know, I think a lot of that, you know, this whole magic and misconception, I think people are off base with. I know that it's an easy conception to feel that, you know, sponsors want to put money into sponsors. I don't think it's as that. I think it's a byproduct. I think what happens is when somebody has a well-funded program, it almost masks itself as security, right? Like some of our biggest fears are we're going to sign up with a guy that halfway through the season is either going to be out of money or not be able to continue to compete. And you've already put that stuff in. And what are you going to do? Like, you're going to go back and try to drag it back out of him? Like, you know, in the best of cases, it's not usually going to happen. So I think that there's this very fine line of, you know, when you don't have a relationship with somebody, you tend to cling to people that either, you know, have the means to continue to fund their program, or they have big name sponsors, because big name sponsors bring other sponsors. That's just how it works. And it's usually because of the relationship aspect, you know, when people have to do their diligence, when people, you know, like Luis or whatever it may be, they have to decide if they're going to sponsor somebody, they're doing a little bit of vouching for that person. So it's up to them to do the diligence. Well, it's a lot easier to be able to be like, "Oh, well, Garrett's on the car and Nitto's on the car and this," and then, "Well, this guy, he doesn't really have any sponsors," right? Yeah. So I think that's the illusion, but I don't know that it's sponsors themselves, you know, hate that type of thing. I could argue that you may find some sponsors that could use that and almost feel like, "Oh, why do I have to give this guy money if he's getting it done for this much money?" But I don't know that that's a great way of looking at it either. But I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of people like the price breakdown, though.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot of people that want to know about it and stuff. Because, like, in 2018 19 at Orlando, like, if you counted my winnings and then some of the money that some of the sponsors gave me, like, I almost broke even actually on one event. So, which is insane, you know, is pretty good. It being Pro 2 and not having someone giving you a bunch of money.
Well, I think it's interesting that, and this is the part, like, hey, if you're not a professional driver or if you're not really exposed to drifting, I would say, and tell me if you think I'm off on these numbers, but I would say 95% of the field doesn't break even.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. This is not a sport of wealth. This is a sport of love. And that's why I think you find people that do it for as long as they possibly can. And then, than you see a driver turnover rate, right? Like,
sure.
Well, I think it, like, I'll come back and like I work construction, or I'm an inspector for in construction. So everyone on the job sites are like, well, how much did you win? Like, how much money did you get? And I'm like, or they're asking me all the time, like, man, you're a professional driver, so you must make a lot of money. I'm like, it's not like that.
Right.
Well, that's and one of the things that people don't understand. When you have a passion for something and you love something, unfortunately, doesn't always equate to this massive amount of money, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, even yourself, Jonathan, you love this, so you do it because you love it, you know? Some people are motivated by money, though, you know, which is that, you know, I feel like if you're motivated by money, you're never going to get anywhere. Once you allow yourself to be engulfed in something because you love it, that's when hopefully down the line you end up making money from it. You know, and I'm sure the way you were driving, it was just passion, you know.
For sure. Listen, I hope I make money every day.
So, but yeah, one last question I wanted to ask. All right, was,
I want you to do it.
What's advice that you would give to drifters that would be coming in? Like, let's say if I were to buy a car right now, and I wanted to get into drifting, what is some advice you would give them?
First up drifters.
Yes. What's some advice you would give them if they were looking to kind of come into
just starting to learn how
professional,
to
professional,
competitive drive?
Exactly.
Dedication. I mean, the main thing is
money.
The best advice I'd give is just don't let everyone else tell you what you have to do. You know, like, I mean, for instance, like, everyone told me I didn't have to have a bunch of power, but it's something that's worked out very, very well in my, you know, in the way of my path, because I'm used to the power now, you know, like, it wasn't like a big difference. And also I think, if you like have started out, like, and you got a good chassis and you're driving and then you're wanting to go do pro-am or something, don't swap to like a crazy chassis right off the bat, you know, at least get like 1 year in, and drive the same chassis, you know. You don't want to have a huge change if you're going from like pro am to pro 2, and then like I see like a lot of people maybe pro 2 to pro 1, they build a whole different car and that they're not used to, and I feel like trying to be comfortable with what you have is very important.
Yeah,
I agree with that. You would say, yeah.
Saying I don't have any other choice. I'm trying to think, what was I gonna say before your question? I do know. So here's my question. You earned a pro license. Let's say you take advantage of it. What happens with, because the Hooman team, is he, would he still come with you to the rounds where he wasn't competing?
Well, I kind of think I'm going to still help out on his car and stuff, but we'll probably, you know, travel separately now. We'll see how it goes. But I'm definitely going to be a part of like his car. His car is built identical to mine, so I'm the one that's got all the knowledge on what needs to be done, how to, you know, and how it works and everything. Hooman doesn't really, he just drives, you know.
Damn.
He doesn't work on cars or nothing. So he's just like, hey, fix this, and then, you know, you fix it for him. That's it.
Oh, so his car breaks, you're under his car. Your car breaks, you're under your car.
Yeah. He has his own crew members, though, that are very good, too, and they help out with him. So, but if something else is more serious, and, you know, I'll come over there and I'll help him and try to get things sorted out. So, because we had a couple issues this year with his car, and if he had, like, knew a little bit more about the setup, we could have probably, you know, resolved some things a little bit quicker versus him trying to relate them to us. And, you know, it's kind of hard if I'm not the one driving the car, knowing what's going on. So,
yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting to see you guys out there. I think that you guys did a great job with livery this year and still kind of maintaining your own look while also kind of putting a lot of the same flavor into both cars. You know what I mean? There's a lot of personality, sure. I think, in your livery compared to a lot of other liveries that are out there. So that was pretty good. I think
that was all due to AZ Rag, they did James livery, right? Yeah,
they no, they did the rap, but I forgot that guy's name. It was kind of different, but he was off Instagram that Hooman knew that he's the one that did the design for us. He did like some other rat or like liveries and stuff for some cars on Forza and stuff like that. And some like games.
Man, cool. I'll tell you, it's like if you can use Forza now to do liveries, you're in it. So listen, so this Harlan again came up with another pretty good comment. So he said, Rome said the same thing about switching cars. So he's talking about the chassis switch. He goes, but if you look at Brutsky, he switched chassis and stopped hitting walls. He goes, sometimes maybe a better setup is super helpful. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, he went from a completely, like, he started out in a chassis that he knew wasn't, you know, like, that great yet. Like, right. A lot of people know that the wheelbase is short in that car. It's hard to drive. And Dimitri knew that as well, you know. But I think he definitely made the right footsteps in going to the different chassis.
Yeah. So do you think that if you could go into another car, if you can go into another chassis, what kind of chassis you think you would migrate to?
Ooh.
Dang. So I already have this thing planned out, and I've really been wanting to do it. But I definitely want to. I want an R35.
Oh.
It's nice. It's 3 inches. The wheelbase is like a little bit shorter than mine. My car's really long.
Yeah.
So I like the longer wheelbase. I was going to build a 370. A lot of people have them. Nobody has a G37. Mm-hmm. There was another R35 that Jerry Yang and them had, but they got rid of it. They still have it, but they don't use it in competition.
Right.
But
well, that's what Taguchi was driving.
Yeah. I'd love to have a LS swapped GTR, though.
You know, you just killed like every Nissan purist that's out there, right?
For sure.
He's like, that's kind of what I do. but yeah, no, it's hard. You know, the R35. I'm a big. You know, I have a 350. I have a twin turbo 350, and I've been hunting around. I'm trying to get an R33 GTR because I just have. I really want an R34, but that's not going to happen because I'm not rich. But even the price of R33s have just skyrocketed so much. Anyhow, bottom line is. I'm really big into that Nissan thing, and I love GTRs, but I'd argue that GTRs haven't had the most successful run in Formula Drift.
No, for sure, but only one guy's tried it, and
well, two.
They also drove a G37, and I mean, there hasn't been much success with a G37 yet. So
that's true. That's true. Daigo Sato, he drove a GTR in Pro, didn't he?
No, Robbie Nishida is the one that drove it.
He's right. Yeah. Sorry.
And I've talked to the guys that have driven the chassis. So, and they say it's a good chassis. It just needed, you know, a little bit more change. And also the suspension in the front is very similar to a G37 370. So it's not like a huge change in chassis either. So
I know. Well, I mean, listen, if you decide you want to pull the VR, can I have it?
Oh, I'll just give it to you for sure. It's not worth much.
It's not worth much. I mean, even if you just want to throw me a transaction, I mean, throw me a dip or something. I mean, there's plenty out there.
Yeah, I'll send you the VR and just put a boat anchor.
Oh man, that's terrible. I'll even take the blown up VR if you find one. I'll take.
I'm sure you would.
Oh my god, there's so much money, but they are so cool. I don't know. I got a big thing for Nissan.
It is a good platform, actually. And it would even be something I would consider later on down the road to do that if I could make something happen factory-wise, like with Nissan or something. But right now, like, LS is cheap, reliable. Yeah. I know what I've got, and it makes more sense for me.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that putting up a VR, especially a built VR, it's not a question of power, but I definitely think that there's definitely something to being able to affordably make the power you need to be reliable. I mean, Forsberg struggled for a while trying to get a bunch of things figured out too. So,
well, that was BQ though.
Oh, but didn't he go VR, it
worked.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. He's right.
Yeah, that's because I worked at Dynasty and they specialize in BQ engines, and honestly, it's just. I don't care what you really do to the BQ. Like they're not going to take the abuse at that, you know, that horsepower range. I mean, it just isn't going to happen.
Yeah. No, I don't even make that much power in my car, and I detuned the car right off the bat just because I was like, I don't really want to blow this thing. So
for sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, what do you got?
Well, one of the comments says the G35 arguably stunted Taguchi's driving, I feel. and I've only watched since 2017.
I don't know if it was the... I feel bad. I don't know if it was the G35. He means R35, I think, but anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. So next season, what's your percentage? Give me the odds that we go pro. What's the percentage?
Oh, I'm already in the 90%. I mean 90% percentage on that. Like I'm set on doing it. That's it's exciting. Just gotta like make sure I got that like 5%. You know that I'm gonna be able to make it. You know, happen. Yeah, I mean, well, even if I don't land like a crazy amount of money, like I feel like as long as I'm use my resources, you know, properly and smart, I think I can put together a good program to keep the car together, or you know, be able to have things to get to keep the car on track.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful. I've heard rumors in the mill that that it's possible that New Jersey will become a venue at least one time. So if that comes to fruition this year, then I would love to come out and
We'll be there, man.
See there? It's not too far from us.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's not too bad at all.
And to be fair, in the comments, you know, because, you know, I read the comments when we were not these comments. Oh, when I was watching the lives, they were saying the G37 is ready for pro. So everybody was like, "Oh, he should be in pro right now." So, tell you, man, we were talking about it before you came in. There was this battle between him and Micah Diaz. Smoked him though, but like, because the horsepower difference was completely, you know, but to the point where he was like, you were playing with him. You were just like tapping him, like. Yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm glad that you're looking forward to going into pro, and as a fan, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, Jonathan, I will let you go because I know that you're got stuff to do today. But thanks for coming on and doing this. I appreciate it. Nice to, you know, kind of sit down and chop it up for a few minutes.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for being here and for being so easy to do it with, you know what I mean? He made the time for us, you know. I was a little nervous because he was like kind of messaging me. Well, he messaged me yesterday. I wasn't too sure, but I think it was the time. We were expecting you to do it at 1 p.m. because you had a couple things going on. But then when we switched it to 3.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just living this dream, you know, drifting. I just get to do whatever I want, you know, work on my car all day.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, I gotta have a job though.
Yeah.
I mean, I find working to be slightly overrated.
Oh, for sure.
But, you know, I mean, it's nice that you made time for the little people.
Look at that comment.
Tell Jonathan he needs a Buffalo Wild Wings sponsor.
That would be awesome.
Oh my God, Coney, thanks for sending me to FD New Jersey 2019.
McBoostin is so cute.
McBoostin, who's this? Must be his boys, because I don't know. That must be an inside joke. On
no, that used to be my name on a car form when I was like 16 or 17.
I'm glad that I don't have any of my car form names. Anyhow, I'm gonna let you get out of here. Thanks for doing this, and
thank you, Jonathan.
Hopefully, we'll speak soon and figure out how we can. Work together on that on that FD program.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. I appreciate it, guys. Hope you all have a good day.
Yeah, you too, man. Take care.
John, have a good one.
Thanks.
Peace.
See you.
Sick. Well, let's see. We are out. Right? Good.
No, we're still here?
No, that thing's over. So now we can go. If you guys have any questions or anything that you want to talk about, this is the time to throw them in. We'll be happy to get to them. And I don't know, answer your questions. If not, we will get out of here. Let's see. But I'm going to start recapping a few things before we go. If you have any questions, now's the time. We're going to be using our regular Q&A that we'll be doing on Instagram and Facebook. Actually, you know what we should do right now? We should go quickly live onto Instagram and tell people if they got questions. Throw them in.
Okay.
You want to do it?
How are we going to do this?
Well, you're going to just kind of move it around. So anyhow, with that, every Friday we're doing our best to bring you a piece of content, so please make sure you check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube right now, make sure you hit that like and subscribe button. There are a bunch of things that we have going on. We did a new show called The Hype is Right, and on The Hype is Right, we're kind of putting some people and some different celebrities and personalities, etc., on there and allowing them to give us their view on where cars sit. The other week we did a Tesla Model 3 Type R, NSX. We've done some cool things. So what up? If you have questions, throw them in and we will answer them. So that's what's up.
So just to talk about the podcast, I think Jonathan was so easy to talk to. I'm excited for his upcoming season. I think this whole season I got to watch some of his runs, and honestly I'm a big fan, you know. So it's definitely exciting to see what he decides to do next year, because I think even in pro, he'd do absolutely great.
Yo, if you have any questions for us, you can't see me. If you have any questions, throw them in now. We'll answer them. Anyhow, so I don't know. You know, we're trying to make a push on separating some of this stuff. That's why our lives. We've been coming to you live on Instagram and Facebook at 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. We move that so that we can make sure that we do our podcast live on YouTube, where we are right now, at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays. And we're trying to segregate it a little bit just to make it super native to, you know, the different platforms. But if you have any questions, we got a couple there right now. We'll take them from you. And Harlan, if you're still on, thanks for throwing the different things. Oh, no. I kind of pieced it together, Harlan. I just didn't know if anybody else would get it. So during FD, we did a quick ticket giveaway in 2019 with Matt Van Kirk, and Harlan's commenting that he won those tickets. So I'm happy that it was you. Yeah,
I remember that.
No, it's cool. And thanks for coming to hang out with us for a little while. Let's see. We got questions.
All right. So
what we got?
We got the first question, which give me a second here. What's up, guys? I know you're looking at my face. All right. When are you getting Goodwin Racing's order in? Been trying to buy new Hypergrams, Hyperchrome 15.8.
I think you mean Countergrams, Hyperchrome. And the answer to that is, you have to call Goodwin, because we've bring in multiple orders for him. He decides, you know, where his back orders and in the order and different things like that. So he'll know the ETA on that.
All right, next up. Yo, just got my Hypergrams mounted on my E36. I'm so pleased with them.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. We appreciate that.
Solid.
Next question. Could I get a discount on the Koenig Myth?
No. Next question.
Oh, that's all we got. And that's all we got for now. Right. Yep.
So I guess, listen, I think we put in good work. It was always good talking to Jonathan. And, you know, for those that aren't like extreme drift people, I think that it still brings an interesting perspective as to what it takes to run a pro-am version program versus a professional driving program. So it's just one of those things. I think that, you know, when you speak to, the more you speak to these drivers, I think the most interesting part that I've seen in, you know, talking to various drivers at different levels and watching them make jumps between, you know, different seasons and progressions is that the one thing that you really see is that there is a lot of behind the scenes topics and things that they have to be concerned with to be able to make those jumps and do it successfully. And, you know, jumping from Pro 2 to Pro 1 is an extremely tough jump. And I'd even argue that it's way tougher than going from Pro-Am to Pro 2. Mm-hmm. And that's because the skill level jumps up dramatically from Pro 2 to Pro. Mm-hmm. Additionally, the amount of rounds double, which means you need double the funding and you need to have, you have double the wear in the car. And, you know, I mean, it just becomes one of those things where your car now has to be competitive with guys that have basically been at that level in most of the times for many years and have really dialed in a lot of their platforms, their cars, their programs. And then comes this one other thing, which, you know, people often don't pay any attention to, which is the fact that from pro two to pro, you see tracks that you've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And what you know, what you may not understand if you're not like really into the whole drift thing is that the amount of settings that, you know, people have, like, you know, whether it be your toe in setting, I mean, your toe settings, your camber settings, you know, tire pressures, you know, what things worked for you, what things didn't work for you, etc. All those adjustments and all those things, they're notes that you have based off of your last performance.
Yeah.
When you come in there blind the first time and you've never raced a track and you have no settings and you have to figure it all out. And the one thing that Jonathan mentioned that was really accurate has to do with the practice time. Remember that on their practice days, especially, you know, that Thursday where, you know, the public obviously isn't allowed in, even in a typical non-COVID year, one of the things that happens is they're allowed, I believe, 12 runs for the entire day. So you really have to get the car to progress very quickly. So when you get to practice before qualifying, you're pretty much dialed in and there's minor changes that are going to happen. You can't get the car ready on a fly. It you know, these tracks change very quickly. So without having any sort of predetermined initial ballpark settings, it becomes very tough to make that jump into a brand new track, brand new series. There's just so much brand new. So I think the jump from Pro 2 to Pro is way more complicated.
I'm sure.
So sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's my thing. We'll scroll through, see if we have any other questions. All right. If not, we're going to be getting out of here. Again, if you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, please think about subscribing. We're putting out a lot of content, definitely something that's coming every Friday. And on top of every Friday, we started a bunch of new little shows that are going to start popping up in addition to some Wheel Tech. What up? And I don't know. We've moved our lives. We've went to 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays and on Instagram and Facebook. And we bring our podcast live on YouTube
every Wednesday.
3 p.m.
3 p.m., 12 p.m. Pacific time. Anyways, next question.
It's true.
Any plans for 12 wide wheels on the off-road side of Koenig?
We had them, not Koenig. If you go to Mamba, MAMBAwheels.com, we actually have had some 20 by 12 and 22 by 12.
Yep, there you go. All right, and the next question. Let's go. Okay, that was the last one because the guy asked a question twice, so I thought it was
cool. We got one. Absolutely love the Amperforms in bronze, but do you offer them in a gloss white? I'm on the fence about wheel color, but I know I need some Amperforms in my life. No, Andy, so here's what I would say. First off, thanks for watching, my dude. Second, I would say is we don't, and obviously, they're not on our website, so we don't have them. But, you know, I think that our wheels are so affordable that you could take them and
powder coat them.
Well, even if you don't powder coat them, if you, you know, have them painted or whatever it may be, you can refinish them and get them to that white. White is a very touchy subject. It comes around every once in a while. Like, we've had periods where we had a lot of white wheels when they were really heavily in demand, and if it went back that way, we again would do it. Problem with white wheels is if you've ever tried to keep any of them clean, you almost want to commit suicide when you're done.
I'm sure.
It's brutal.
It's like sneakers, you know? Like, white sneakers are,
except it would be like if you decided you wanted to have white sneakers and not ever walk on the soles.
Yeah.
Like, you just walked on the side of your feet and kept them clean.
It's a nightmare. Yeah.
You drive down the block. You hit the brake once. There's brake dust all over the wheel.
What I will say is I'll agree with Andy. They would look nice in a white color.
Yeah.
And I hope you do get them. And if you do get them and decide to make them white, send me a DM.
See,
I would like to check them out.
Luis basically just made this about him.
Yeah, that's what I do.
That's what I do. So anyhow, so that's it. I think we're going to get out of here. Like, again, if you have any other questions or anything that comes up, feel free to send us a message or a DM. We do our best to get back to all of them or most of them or as many as we possibly can that don't get stuck on our spam filters.
Ooh.
And, let's see. That goes back to your Instagram live question. Can you ceramic coat wheels? Harlan, I'm going to hook you up with a special answer.
There it is.
Go back to last week and watch the podcast.
Please.
Eric from G-Technic.
Was he?
Look.
We're hitting you. Eric from G-Technic. Eric from G-Technic came on. G-Technic makes wheel coatings, different ceramic coatings, and different things. And he came on and he gave us a full education on.
Shout out to that C5.
Yeah. Stupid. He gave us a full education on how you what kind of things you should look at when ceramic coating wheels, what how you should maintain them, what does it mean, how does the life extend, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Eric was nice enough to send me some C5 that I can do. So I may even film a video when it gets warmer where we throw C5 on some of our new forged wheels and I try to do it from a first-time perspective.
Ooh.
Never ceramic coated a wheel. Look at that plug. Listen, Harlan, I'm a trained master in the plug.
Watch our podcast. You know what I mean? Shout out to G Technic.
All right, now Louis.
HP Logic. Stop.
All right, he's getting out of control. Listen, that's it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. And we will be back here next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. And we can do this whole thing all over again.
Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't yet.
Make sure you take care of yourself. And we'll catch you next week. Peace out.